Welcome or welcome back to Horse for Horror. I'm Mariah.
And I'm Kayla.
And this week we are covering a murderer.
Good, good, good.
And her name is Lois Reese. Have you ever heard of her?
I don't think so. I saw the picture you posted in the chat too, and I have not seen her.
Okay, cool. And we'll have that one uploaded to our Instagram. So if anyone ever wonders, go to our Instagram to see our photo dump.
Maybe one day we'll do video podcasts, you know?
Yeah, that would be fun. But not today.
Nope. Not anytime soon.
Yeah. All right, so. On the evening of Friday, March 23rd, 2018, the police department of Blooming Prairie, Minnesota, dispatched two police officers to conduct a welfare check on a man named Dave Reese. None of Dave's employees nor his business partner had seen him for almost 2 weeks, and he hadn't picked up or returned their phone calls.
That's a long time.
People in Dave's life had received responses to text messages, but Dave used the voice-to-text feature, which made the words run together, and these replies use punctuation. So they're like, hey, these are probably two different people.
Oh, okay.
Stranger still, Dave was supposed to have left for a fishing tournament in Illinois 3 days earlier, and he would have taken his white Cadillac Escalade, which is what he used to pull his 20-foot-long boat. But on Thursday, just the day prior, two of his employees saw Lois, Dave's wife of 35 years, pull out of the driveway in the Escalade, and they hadn't seen her since. Yes, I agree. Blooming Prairie is a blink of a town in southeastern Minnesota surrounded by fields of corn and soybeans. It's a town of about 1,900 people who leave their front doors unlocked and know each other by first names. It is not a place steeped in intrigue, or at least it wasn't.
Dun, dun, dun.
The night the police visited the Reese's home in the country, it was dark and cold with snow still on the ground. Unsurprisingly, no one answered the door, so the two police officers walked around the house's perimeter. They noticed light coming from an open bathroom window, and when they looked inside, they spotted what appeared to be a body covered with a blanket. The cops called two deputies from the sheriff's office who went inside, and upon entering, they found David Reese on the floor. He had been shot twice with a .22 caliber handgun, once in the chest and once in the back. One of the bullets pierced clean through his forearm, suggesting he raised it to protect himself. Dave had been dead for approximately 10 days.
Yeah. Why is the window... Well, maybe the window's open for the smell.
Yeah. Yeah.
But why was the light on?
I don't know. Because a dumb murderer, whoever did it. So ask anyone in Blooming Prairie, and they will tell you that Dave was a jovial guy. Always quick to offer a tip on the best fishing spots, he was generous to his employees and loved to tell stories. But it was his deep, booming laughter that left the biggest impression. His friends recalled that when Dave laughed, you soon found that you were laughing too without even realizing why. And being around him just felt good.
Sounds like a nice guy.
Yeah. Jerry Bissell, one of Dave's friends, later stated, quote, "He was my best buddy. Every day I go by their house, I wonder what the hell happened up there," end quote.
Aww.
And to find out, law enforcement had to answer a separate question. What the hell happened to Lois Reese, Dave's wife? Born in Rochester, Minnesota, Dave Reese grew up in the southeast of the city's downtown. He was known as a prankster in high school who enlisted in the Navy the spring before graduation. Dave was stationed in San Diego, California, where he married Lois in 1982. Dave was 19 and Lois was 20.
Okay.
And Lois was also from Rochester. She was the fourth of five children and obviously was Dave's high school sweetheart. Well, ish.
Mm-hmm.
Her father was an engineer at IBM, and their mother was a hoarder, which embarrassed Lois so bad as a teenager that she didn't invite any friends over.
Yeah, I can see that. Some of my family are basically hoarders.
Yeah. And Lois left high school after the 11th grade. I'm not really, she's older than him, and like nothing really said why she didn't graduate, but either way, she and Dave married, and she followed him in the Navy.
Okay.
They had three children in 4 years, boy, girl, boy. And when Dave finished in the Navy, they moved back to Rochester. Dave drove a forklift at a local metal shop and eventually opened up a small shop that sold live bait and fishing tackle named the Bait Box, which is cute.
Yeah.
Lois ran a daycare center out of their home, which had an above-ground swimming pool in the backyard. In 2005, they actually left Rochester to move to Blooming Prairie, like I said, a very small town, where Dave could pursue his dream of opening a wax worm farm.
That is a big change from the city. Like,
also so a dream?
Both from Rochester. Yeah, right. Both from Rochester, met in San Diego. Went back to Rochester.
They met in Rochester, but married once they got to San Diego.
Okay. But either way, like Rochester, San Diego, and then to Blooming Prairie, like way different.
All because he wanted to sell worms. But allegedly, I mean, the worm farm is pretty lucrative.
I would believe that, yeah. Especially in the country. It's probably definitely where he needed to go to sell that.
Yeah, and have enough room, yeah.
True.
Several months after they arrived, on the afternoon of February 16th, 2006, a fire destroyed the Reese's home. No one was hurt, thankfully, but they lost everything. The cause actually came down to, potentially, some faulty wiring that Dave had done, which he felt terrible about, of course.
Yeah, that sucks. It's always faulty wiring.
You know? I know. Yeah, that's why it's so important.
So terrifying.
But actually, in a show of sympathy, the Blooming Prairie neighbors actually collected and donated money to help replace what they'd lost. So on top of that and the insurance claim, the family was able to rebuild their home.
Aw, that's super nice.
Yeah, and Lois set up another daycare facility in that home as well. And she was known for, like, not only taking care of the kids, but also the parents. And she would have hot sandwiches ready for the parents who dropped their kids off in the mornings.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Yeah, that's awesome.
How do you turn from that to murder?
Oh, well, now that she murdered them yet, Kayla.
Yeah, okay. That's fair. But, like, you sent me a picture and she is that's in an true. Orange jumpsuit.
Once Lois's children had children of their own, she lavished her grandkids with gifts, as they do. She bought them cell phones and four-wheelers that they could ride around their property. She also joined the local bowling league and traveled all over the state to various tournaments. And one of her teammates later recalled, quote, "She was fun-loving. She just had the cutest smile," end quote.
She does, actually.
Yeah, she's a pretty good-looking lady, yeah.
She looks really sweet.
Yeah. And that was the consensus around town. Lois was nice. She kept a clean house and appeared to be thoughtful and kind. She was also a really good cook, and she would bring lunch over to the guys who worked at their worm farm.
That's so nice, too.
Yeah. And after she stopped running the daycare in 2014, she started helping out at the farm, which had become a very lucrative business. The staff actually made weekly deliveries to Walmart, Quick Trip, and various bait shops throughout Minnesota, Wisconsin, Illinois, and Iowa.
Damn.
Yeah, Jerry Bissell, who again was one of Dave's friends, stated, quote, "That place was a money-making machine."
I bet. That's awesome. And all you have to do is keep worms? Like,
yeah. What? I'm like, damn, how do you start that job now?
Right? Yeah.
And Dave treated his employees well. They were mostly young guys who were in their teens or early 20s who came to think of him as, like, sort of a second father. He would, like, loan them money when they needed it. He also just paid them fair wages and gave them advice. They stated, quote, "He was kind to people he didn't even know."
That's really nice.
Ugh. Yeah. So the last time that Dave's friends saw him was at a local bar on Thursday, March 8th, 2018. They drank, shot pool, talked about football, so really nothing out of the ordinary. Out of the ordinary, wow. Dave and Lois actually left the next day to go to Wisconsin to see their grandson play in a basketball tournament, and no one had heard from him since beyond the text messages.
Okay. That's making a little more sense.
Yeah. And so on Monday, March 12th, Lois actually stopped by the Worm Farm's office, and instead of greeting them warmly like she usually did, she just told them, "Hey, Dave's not feeling good. I need to go home to take care of him."
Oh, okay.
On Thursday, Lois came back to the office stating that Dave was still sick and that she would be taking him to the doctors the next day. The following week, Lois came back to the farm and claimed that Dave was feeling better and the doctors had actually cleared him to attend a fishing competition in Illinois, so he wasn't coming back so he could rest for that.
Okay, becoming more suspicious.
And so, going to the fishing competition would mean that he would leave on Tuesday morning, pick up his friend Danny Clark, and make the 5-hour drive to the site. And his employees assumed that that's what he did until they saw Lois drive off the property in the Escalade 2 days after what would have been when Dave took the Escalade.
Amateur hour, Lois.
Yeah, bitch. So the 56-year-old grandma turned up the next day at Diamond Joe, which is a farm-themed casino, just a 45-minute drive from her home.
So this is money-related.
And Lois went there often, sometimes with her friends. She liked to play the slot machines in the high rollers room. At 6:30 that night, she bought a packaged sandwich at a gas station next door, which is disgusting.
What?
Yeah.
Also, here's my theory. I'm going to throw it out there.
Mm-hmm.
She gambled all their money away. He found out they got in a fight. She shot him.
That's a good theory.
We'll see if I'm right.
Yeah, you have to see. So the same night that she ate that packaged sandwich, disgusting, the police discovered Dave's body.
That sandwich was a bad omen.
Yeah. And so the discovery of Dave's body meant Lois had been in and out of the house for over a week while he lay dead in the bathroom.
How are you that cold?
That's insane, yeah.
Like, I don't know that I'd be able to, like, go into that house.
Yeah.
Knowing what was in there.
I agree. By the time investigators tracked her down and arrived at Diamond Joe, she was gone. The sheriff's office released a statement identifying Lois as a person of, as a person of interest sought after by law enforcement and, quote, known to frequent casinos.
Mm-hmm.
So from the beginning, she was the only suspect in Dave's death. Quote, "All signs pointed immediately to her," said Brian Smith, a U.S. Marshal who assisted on the case. But why would she kill her husband?
That's the question of the year.
Investigators found no evidence of Dave or Lois having an affair, nor of any domestic abuse. But they did discover that in the days after Dave's murder, Lois had been forging checks.
Mm.
Law enforcement also gathered intelligence on the fact that Lois stole money in the past and theorized that she had a gambling addiction. Kayla.
My theory.
So compulsive gamblers fall, okay, according to what I looked at, fall into two basic categories. Thrill seekers, who are typically men, and they like playing the skills-based game with high stakes, wanting to win big. And then, of course, escape artists, who often play the slot machines, not to hit a jackpot alone, but rather to enter, like, a trance-like state. And women who gamble, or women who have, like, a gambling habit or an issue with it, tend to fall in the escape artist side. According to a 2005 article about female gambling published in the International Journal of Mental Health and Addiction, electronic slot machines, quote, like alcohol and drugs, can be used for mood management. Many women with gambling problems are seeking a way to numb emotions, shut out the world, and orchestrate a sort of time out, end quote.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and the article continues, quote, as the gambling problem progresses, many women become more and more isolated. This exacerbates the feeling of loneliness, shame, and guilt that women with gambling problems experience, end quote. And during the investigation, officers discovered that Lois had been withdrawing from her friends and families in the previous months.
That's so interesting. The psychology behind that would be really interesting to get into.
Yeah, I agree. Mm. And I really, like, if I like slot machines. Like, don't let me say really like them, but I like, they're fun. Where you just, like, pull the lever. Oh, my God. Well, don't.
Yeah, never gambled.
Like you, gambling wasn't really Dave's thing. So he went to Diamond Joe very infrequently. Gambling was rather Lois's thing, and it had become a problem in the years prior. Lois had swindled several worm farm workers, but I don't know why that's funny. Worm farm employees by soliciting donations for a golf cart for Dave to use, something that never materialized after they gave her money.
That's really shitty.
One of her family members suspected that she went to the casino with the money that was designated for her father's funeral.
Oh, no, Lois. What the fuck?
Her youngest son, Brayden, told Inside Edition that she had gambled away over $500,000 in inheritance from her father.
Ma'am.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
What the fuck? Oh, my God. She's got... Obviously, she has problems. I feel really, really bad for that aspect because...
Yeah. You need help.
She should have got some help, yeah.
Actually, the most brazen theft was from Lois's older sister, Kim. In October 2010, Kim's marriage was falling apart and she had a mental breakdown. Lois and Dave actually let Kim live with them for a while before placing her in the adult foster care system.
What?
Yeah, and so in February of 2012, claiming that her sister was, quote, unable to perform tasks for daily living or make decisions regarding her medical needs, end quote, Lois became Kim's legal guardian and her conservator. So she took control of basically all of her decisions.
This is giving the I Really Care a Lot movie. Did you watch that?
Yes.
I didn't watch it.
I did. Yeah. I thought it was great. Yeah.
Where they become legal guardians and then take all their money.
Yep. And so, egregious. According to forms that Lois filed with the courts, her sister suffered from bipolar disorder as well as clinical depression and had the cognitive capacity of a 10-year-old.
How does she get to be that age and no one has helped her?
I know. Lois also reported that her sister's emotional, mental, and physical states had deteriorated, and she claimed that Kim had schizophrenia, Parkinson's disease and OCD that caused her to go on shopping sprees and spend lavishly, which is why Lois needed to be in charge.
Well, that just kind of sounds like the manic part of BPD. So
yeah. But they people theorize that that wasn't true.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wait. The bipolar disorder wasn't, or the schizophrenia and the...
That Kim needed Lois.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that she was making it all up. Because Lois withdrew thousands of dollars at a time from an ATM inside Diamond Joe.
How can you withdraw that amount of money?
It's, yep, I agree.
I had to get $700 out of an ATM one time and hit my limit at, like, 5.
Yeah.
Because you had to get 200 at a time.
Oh, huh.
It capped you at 200, but it wasn't in a casino, so.
Yeah, they just want your money.
I'm sure
there.
They're just, like, yeah, completely unlimited, just so you can spend as much as possible.
Oh, yeah. And a court audit dated September 15, 2015, uncovered Lois's betrayal of her sister, totaling over $100,000.
So $500,000 that she blew of her own inheritance, and then over $100,000 of her sister's.
Yeah.
Not to mention all of the employees that she swindled.
And just like the day-to-day cash that she has. On October 8th, 2015, her guardianship was suspended, and 4 months later, she was officially discharged. Kim was officially discharged from the adult foster care system.
Oh, good.
For some reason, the Attorney General's office decided not to press charges against Lois after a judge ordered her to repay all of the stolen funds. So, don't know what happened there. Most people in Blooming Prairie knew Dave and Lois as a nice, normal couple. However, the people closest to the Reeses were aware that all was not right and hadn't been for a few years. Scott Carlson, one of Dave's closest friends, stated, quote, "Lois was likable, but you always knew she was a click off. She did some oddball shit," end quote.
What kind of oddball shit?
Well, in July of 2016, Lois completely disappeared.
Oh, okay.
She didn't answer phone calls, text messages, didn't tell anyone where she was. And Dave had also discovered some new debts that she had incurred while gambling. And he was actually so concerned that he reported her missing.
Dang.
When Lois returned, she simply said that she'd been visiting a girlfriend in Minneapolis and didn't know what to think of it. Like, sorry you didn't hear from me.
What?
And over the years, friends had heard Dave make an ominous comment more than once. Quote, "If I ever go missing, you come looking for Lois." End quote.
That's not good. That's not a good sign. If you feel like you have to tell your friends, if something happens to you, look at my spouse, you should probably get away from that situation.
Yeah, not good.
PSA.
So where the fuck is Lois Reese?
Where the fuck is Lois Reese?
But
that
before,
should be the name of this.
Yeah. But before we get there, we need to talk about Pam.
Pam?
Mm-hmm.
Who's Pam? Has anyone met a good, like a nice Pam?
Oh my god, you asshole. My grandma was named Pam. Pam Love.
Really?
Yeah.
That's so cute.
Pam
Love. I've only
Marlene.
Known one Pam.
She was nice.
Aw.
Yeah.
I've only met one Pam and she seemed nice, but.
Oh wait, Pam on The Office too.
Oh, I love Pam on The Office.
Yeah.
Wow, what am I thinking about?
Yeah, so now you're the terrible
we love
one.
Pam. Yeah, sorry. We love Pam.
So Pam Hutchins arrived in Fort Myers, Florida on Tuesday, April 3rd, 2018. She was there to support her longtime best friend, Donna Fitreau, whose husband had recently completed suicide.
Aww.
Donna and her family had planned to spread his ashes on a nearby island. While Donna stayed with her family, Pam checked into condo 404 at the Marina Village, and she was staying alone.
Mm. Okay.
Pam was 59 years old, had short blonde hair with a wide smile, and was described as outgoing and quick to make friends.
Actually, yeah, that kind of seems like a Pam.
Yes, yeah.
There was like bubbly.
Yep, yeah, cute.
Yeah. I don't like how you're posing Pam, though. Like, I feel like Pam's about to meet her demise.
My God, we don't know that. We're just talking about how great Pam is. Okay. Pam loved to fish, stay out late, and vacation in Mexico, which, girl, same. Never been there, but I know I love it.
True.
So Pam was a successful car saleswoman in Virginia Beach, and she was actually divorcing her husband. She had recently moved to Bradenton, Florida, where she was actively putting in an offer on a condo there.
Aww.
On Tuesday evening, Pam had dinner with Donna and her family watching the sunset. On Wednesday, Donna and Pam met up, shopped at the local shops, and ate lunch together. That evening, Pam had actually declined Donna's offer to join her and her family for dinner. Instead, Pam had said that she would spend her time with another middle-aged woman she had just met.
Don't do it, Pam.
Pam and the unnamed woman spent nearly 3 hours drinking together and talking before a security camera filmed them walking back to Pam's condo.
Lois.
Originally, Pam was going to leave Fort Myers on Thursday, but had decided to stay one more night until Friday. That evening, she ate an early dinner with her new friend, and once again, surveillance footage shows the two of them at the bar, Pam in a pink camo baseball cap and white blouse, the other woman in a blue t-shirt and cream-colored slacks. At one point, the unnamed woman, removed her sunglasses and swished her beach blonde hair over her shoulder. Later that night, Donna texted Pam from the beach where her family was spreading her deceased husband's ashes, but got no reply.
Why wasn't Pam with Donna? That's the whole reason she went down there.
I know. And so at the time, Donna didn't think much of it, thinking potentially that Pam got, like, hung up. And obviously she's, like, with her family, so she can't really, you know, you want to be in the moment in that thing, I am sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Meanwhile, Pam's realtor, Judy Keene, sent her the application required by the HOA for the condo she was going to purchase. They traded texts for a while, but after 7 p.m., Judy didn't hear anything back from Pam. When Pam didn't respond to text messages over the weekend, Judy figured that maybe she was having buyer's remorse. At 8:30 a.m. on Friday, April 6th, Lori Russell, the manager at the Marina Village, received a call at the front desk from condo 404. The woman on the line said something along the lines of, "Oh my God, I slept in so late. I met some great people and I plan to stay for the weekend. Can you just extend my room?" Lori agreed, thinking nothing of it, and put an additional 3 days on one of Pam's credit cards. That same day, shortly after 11 a.m., a woman walked up to the counter of the Wells Fargo Bank in Fort Myers Beach wearing a white fedora. She withdrew $5,000 from Pam's account.
How?
pretending to be Pam. And so she was making small talk with the tell her, saying that she was staying in a nearby hotel, but had recently bought a house in Bradenton, which is where the real Pam had actually bought a house. So she was like completely pretending to be Pam.
So literally this was just like an opportunity.
Yes.
Because they both had blonde hair.
Yep. And looked a little bit alike, yeah.
That is frustrating.
Yep. After leaving the bank, the woman drove all the way to Ocala, Florida, and checked into a Hilton hotel.
Damn.
She signed Pam's name for two room service deliveries and paid with one of Pam's credit card. The next morning, the woman left, and shortly after 10:30 a.m., she used Pam's cards once again to make three withdrawals of $500 at an ATM. The woman continued north and eventually crossed state lines and headed for the Kaushasta Casino Resort, which boasts, quote, the most slots in Louisiana, end quote.
Mm-hmm.
The woman won a $1,500 jackpot on a $5 play, and she used a driver's license and Social Security card to collect her winnings. Both of those documents belonged to, you guessed it, Lois Reese.
Pam.
Lois Reese pretended to be Pam.
She went across state lines so that she could collect in her name.
I think she's just trying to get away from the scene right now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so she's just there like, I just got to get away a little bit. Look at this casino. Let's hang out, you know?
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
You could get lost in a casino.
Totally. Yeah.
Imagine how Donna feels though. Like, she's there spreading ashes and her best friend comes down to like be with her. And now she's like losing her best friend too. That's so sad.
That's so sad. Yeah. Oh my God.
Lois, you bitch.
You bitch. Lois, you bitch. That's probably something on Family Guy. On April 9th, Lori Russell, once again the manager at the Marina Village, was checking units for a possible water leak. When she entered the 404 condo, there was a foul smell, but she figured that it was sewage, which was the problem of the water leak.
Okay.
Still, there was something about the space that felt off, so she asked two male guests to go back in with her.
Okay.
In the bathroom, the guests found a dead woman lying on the floor. She had blonde hair and was wearing a pink camo baseball cap, a white blouse, blue Levi's shorts, and flip-flops. A pillow, which was punctured by a bullet, was on top of her legs. The shot that killed the woman had sliced through her lower left lung, her heart's right atrium, her aorta, her esophagus, and her upper right lung. The 22 caliber bullet was still lodged in the right cup of her bra. The woman had been dead for days, and her toothbrush lay in the sink where she must have dropped it when she was shot. Someone, presumably the killer, had covered her with the towel and stuffed more towels against the crack of the bathroom door. Before leaving, they had turned the thermostat down to 61.
Okay.
Yeah. Obviously, they called 911, and upon learning that Pam had been staying in that room, they called her ex-husband in Virginia Beach. They interviewed guests at the Marina Village as well as Pam's friends. They followed her credit card trail, which led them to the surveillance videos from the Smoke and Oyster, Wells Fargo, and the Ocala Hilton. The same woman was in all of the footage. The woman looked like Hutchinson, the right age, same hair color, comparable complexion and build, but by then, the deputies had obviously confirmed that it was Pam. The more surveillance footage that they watched, the more they saw the other woman. It placed her in 404 at the time of Pam's murder. At 8:34 p.m., a camera within the condo area captured the woman walking by herself towards the building's fourth floor elevator. She stood in the landing area for 13 minutes, appearing distraught and upset. Then she returned to Pam's condo, where it's assumed that the murder took place. Video from the next morning captured the woman in the Marina Village parking lot where she backed up Pam's Acura to a white Cadillac Escalade. She transferred luggage and other items from the SUV into the sedan. So the evening before Pam was found murdered, a sergeant within the sheriff's office had actually come across the white Cadillac Escalade with Minnesota plates. It was actually at the northern tip of the Fort Myers beach, and it had been abandoned. When he ran the registration, he found that it belonged to David Reese, but initially he didn't really know what to make of it because he hadn't called back to Minnesota. Eventually, a woman named Tess Coster, who was a Blooming Prairie resident, connected the dots. So a week prior to Pam's body being found, Tess Coster was cleaning the garage of one of the five rental units she and her husband Rod owned on Fort Myers Beach. They are what people call snowbirds, so they spent their summers in Blooming Prairie, but actually their winters in Fort Myers Beach. That day, their daughter had called them to say that a woman had called their car dealership and identified herself as a friend of her parents. She said that her parents were in Fort Myers, and the woman had said, "Oh, surprise, surprise, I'm in Fort Myers, and I want to go see them."
Surprise, but you're friends with them. You should know where they are.
And so the daughter actually thought nothing of it, which I agree with you. And the daughter gave them the address to where the parents were staying.
Nope. I would not.
So the Costers were actually always inviting people from Blooming Prairie to visit them. Several years earlier, when they sat next to each other at a wedding, the Costers had actually invited the Reeses down to Florida to stay with them. On April 2nd, at about 1:45 p.m., Tess saw a woman with a white ponytail at the end of the driveway check a notebook in her hand and then the house number. Tess took a step towards her and thought that the woman was there to inquire about one of the rentals. She asked and said, "Can I help you?" When the woman looked up and their eyes met, Tess immediately recognized Lois. They'd obviously been friends back home, and Tess obviously, like, kept in touch with everyone, and she knew about the discovery of Dave's body 10 days earlier.
Ooh, okay.
Lois also recognized Tess, quickly ducked her head and muttered something like, "Wrong house," and walked away. Immediately after she left, Tess and Rod called 911, and after half an hour, two deputies showed up.
Really? We're telling you that there's a fugitive or a person of interest? And you're like, "Yeah, let me just like mosey on down." Like, what?
So the police knew that Lois was wanted on the felony theft charge because she was at minimum taking money out of Dave's account, and she was wanted in connection with Dave's death. But they figured that since Tess had saw her, it probably spooked her. They provided additional patrols in the Coster's neighborhood, but they did not stake out the bridge to the mainland or search Fort Myers Beach for Lois.
She is not coming back to that area.
After discovering Pam's body only two blocks from the Coster's house, law enforcement eventually called Tess down to the station.
Eventually.
They showed her three video clips and two photos of the woman making bank withdrawals in Pam Hutchinson's name. And in all of them, Tess identified Lois Reese. Authorities in Florida sent out a nationwide Be on the Lookout alert. And in Minnesota, investigator Ben Bolhe saw it and contacted the deputies in Lee County. They compared notes on the homicides of Dave Reese and Pam Hutchinson. Both victims were shot in the bathroom with the .22 handgun and covered in a blanket or towel. Afterward, the suspect took each victim's vehicle and money, and U.S. Marshals eventually elevated their search for Lois to a, quote, major case, which about fucking time.
Yeah, eventually.
They set up a national hotline and posted billboards in Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, California, and Nevada that read, quote, "Wanted for murder," with Lois's name and photo. They put up a $5,000 reward, and Crime Stoppers of Florida actually offered an additional $1,000, so ultimately $6,000 to bring Lois to justice.
So why did she... Why did she knew that the Costers were in Fort Myers?
Mm-hmm.
Why did she go to that house?
We'll talk about it later. But people think that it's probably, like, she was hoping that one of the rentals were empty and that she could squat there. Just because it was, like, familiar to her, which that would make sense to me. Like, I'd rather be somewhere that I kind of know rather than somewhere completely new. And she wouldn't have to, like, put anything in her name or Pam's name.
Yeah.
So widespread media coverage helped bring in tips, which law enforcement sifted through. But Lois's case had gone cold. Authorities figured that she was likely headed to Mexico, and they alerted U.S. Border Patrol and Mexican authorities. But the widespread media attention and police alerts about Lois didn't seem to penetrate the community in South Padre, which Lois hid in plain sight less than 30 miles from the Mexican border.
Holy shit. How?
Lois walked around calling herself Donna. A woman named Amanda Camacho, a Motel 6 clerk who had checked Donna in, later said that the woman had transformed herself from looking, quote, like an elderly lady into someone who was more provocative, wearing shorts and tank tops, end quote.
What? Okay.
Amanda also noted that this woman named Donna had on her belly what looked like a fresh tattoo depicting a Palm Beach and a sunset.
Okay.
For more than a week, Lois, under the name Donna, trapezed around South Padre making friends. Lois befriended people who were a lot like Pam Hutchinson. Middle-aged women who were single or traveling alone. One evening, she approached a woman named Bernadette Mathias, a 65-year-old court reporter who was sitting alone at the bar of a restaurant. They struck up a conversation, and eventually the two exchanged phone numbers. The next evening, they met again for dinner and eventually ended up back at Bernadette's house, where they hung out in the hot tub and Lois stayed the night in the guest room. The next morning, Bernadette took Lois out to breakfast and eventually drove her new friend back to the Motel 6, where they once again planned plans. Wow, that was a weird way to say that. Bernadette later told law enforcement, quote, "She acted like a really nice person and I trusted her."
Yeah, I'll bet. Charismatic people.
On April 19th, just 1 week after she arrived on the island, Lois drove Pam's white Acura to Dirty Al's, which was just like a restaurant on South Padre. A waiter chatted with her for a few minutes, and across the room, a manager named George Higginbottom observed the conversation. George thought that the woman looked strangely familiar. The long bleached hair, hadn't he seen it somewhere? And when the woman swished it over her shoulder, it clicked. CBS This Morning.
Yep.
After the woman returned the menu and walked out of the restaurant, she wanted to eat at a bar and Dirty Al's didn't have any room. Higginbottom told his staff, quote, "That's her. That's the woman who killed the lady in Florida." And he called the cops.
Good for him.
U.S. Marshals were already in the South Padre Island, so they actually arrived at Dirty Al's really quick, and George told them that Lois was wearing a yellow tank top and white shorts and that her car had Florida plates. He had surveillance footage, but he wasn't quite sure how to retrieve it, but fortunately, the marshals didn't need that. They looked right next door and they saw Pam's Acura.
What is wrong with you, lady?
I know. So officers secured the next door restaurant's exits and several marshals entered the Sea Ranch and surrounded Lois. She was sitting at her preferred location, a spot at the bar. One of the marshals walked up, picked up her purse, and stated, quote, "Lois, we're going to take you out of here and explain what's going on. Don't make a scene," end quote.
Lois, I think she knows what's going on when you're calling her Lois.
Oh, yeah. And she complied without making a single comment. And an officer later recalled, quote, "She didn't have a single emotion on her face," end quote. The next day, the authorities took DNA swabs from Lois and obtained warrants to search the Acura and her Motel 6 room. They found a map, a brochure from the Lucky Eagle Casino, pill bottles, piles of clothes, including the white fedora that she was seen wearing in surveillance videos when she posed as Pam.
Amateur hour.
Yep. They also found tissues, soap, and a green and white towel taken from Marina Village, so undoubtedly placing her at the place where Pam was murdered.
Girl.
They also discovered Pam's checkbook, 4 of her credit cards, over $500 in cash, and a black purse with 2 handguns, a .22 and a 9mm, bullets, a holster, duct tape, and rubber gloves.
The hell did she have all that?
The investigators also found what they described as a trophy, which were Pam's sunglasses wrapped in a hand towel.
That's gross. Come on. Yeah.
And the arrest of Lois unnerved the people that she'd met on South Padre. All the women. Yeah. All the women who'd been taken in by her friendliness shuddered to think that they could have been her next victim. Even Bernadette, not having heard of Lois's arrest, showed up at their scheduled dinner.
Oh, God.
And when she asked around, she learned that the woman that she knew as Donna was someone else entirely.
I can't even imagine what she was thinking.
I know. She told a reporter, quote, "I feel very betrayed and I feel stupid that I could be so gullible. It's just scary, very scary to meet a stranger and think that they're going to be your friend and they turn out to be a killer," end quote.
Yeah.
In Blooming Prairie, the 6 weeks between Dave's disappearance and Lois's arrest rocked the community and its sense of itself. Suddenly, the previous anonymous town was in the headlines because of someone the national media dubbed, quote, "Losing Streak Lois" or "Killer Granny."
That's funny.
To think that a neighbor, a woman who people had shared meals, drinks, and laughs with, someone who was trusted enough to care for local children, had done what she did was crushing. But I will say that as a violent criminal, Lois Reese is an outlier. It is statistically unusual for women to kill, and when they do, it's usually due to the need to protect themselves or what people call, like, you know, whatever, the crime of passion. Mm-hmm. But it is important to note that studies based on the gender of the perpetrator are uncommon because there is a low prevalence of female offenders.
Yeah.
So Trisha Aiken, a forensic psychologist in Minneapolis, stated, quote, "She doesn't fit a profile because you don't have enough people to make a profile." So it's not even like we know any, we basically don't know very much about women killers.
Yeah, we're still learning.
So people started to ask, like, was it gambling that made Lois do it?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. And so despite the headlines and the popular theories, there's only like a handful of cases where gambling was the cause of death. Specifically women killing people as a result of gambling. And the most similar case that I found was of a woman named Donna Blanton, who in 2003 shot her husband, a Virginia state trooper, with his own pistol after they argued about gambling debts, Kayla, which is what you suggested.
See, yeah, that's what I thought. No, it's just weird that she went from like this really sweet, charismatic, like nice lady who cared for people in her community, and then like It was odd that she already was gambling.
Yeah.
And then to go from there to like,
Killing her
she
husband.
killed her husband. And then from there, it's
Killed a
like a
stranger.
switch flipped. Yeah.
Yeah.
And she just kept going. Like, that's so scary. Yeah, she is an intriguing person.
It is rather far more likely for problem gamblers to be violent towards themselves. According to the National Council on Problem Gambling, 1 in 5 have seriously contemplated or attempted suicide. And gambling addiction is far more complicated than we know, and it often occurs alongside other disorders. So commonly co-occurring conditions include depression, anxiety, and bipolar. These conditions often cluster in families, and that is actually the case, appears to be the case of Lois as well. Her mother struggled with hoarding and was eventually committed to a state hospital for mental illness. In addition to Kim, Lois also had another older sister named Cindy who suffered from depression, which, like, I don't really link these two things, but a year after Lois killed her husband, Cindy acted out violently too. In March 2019, at her house, which was 10 miles southeast of Rochester, Cindy argued with her 37-year-old son who was drunk. He actually pushed Cindy, which prompted her and her husband to kick him out. And shortly after a while, she found her son lying in the driveway and told him to get in the car so she could take him home, but he refused. In response, Cindy actually got in her 2004 Ford Explorer and ran
Oh
her son over.
no. I knew that's where that was going.
He suffered a fractured pelvis and terrible head injuries, and when a deputy asked her if
Ooh.
she meant to run over her son, she responded, quote, "You bet." Yeah. Yeah.
Girl. Oh my God. You bet.
Yep.
What?
So Cindy was charged with second and third degree assault, criminal vehicular operation, and domestic assault. But on August 5th, 2019, Cindy actually purchased a clothesline from a hardware store in Rochester and
Oh
drove to
no.
Quarry Hill Park, where she and Lois grew up, and hung herself.
Oh,
So
she
it's just
needed
like
help.
not, it's not going great.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they were all let down.
Yeah. And people close to the Reeses knew that there had been signs that something was amiss. In December 2015, a few months after Lois's theft from her sister was exposed, Dave came home from lunch with a coworker. He asked the coworker to drop him at the house instead of the farm so he could use the bathroom, and when he walked inside, he found Lois unconscious in a chair. She had overdosed on pain pills, and Dave called 911. First responders actually performed CPR until a helicopter arrived and airlifted Lois to a hospital. After almost 2 weeks in the hospital, she recovered and she actually stayed out of sight in Blooming Prairie. But when she did start going out again, she acted as if nothing had happened, and others did too, which like only makes that worse.
Yeah, it's also like small town vibes, so they're just gonna be passive and they're just gonna like talk about it behind your back.
Literally, my next line says, "That's how you carry on in a small town." So,
That's
yeah.
funny. Yeah, crazy.
And Dave did his part to shield Lois from the gossip and the conjecture. No one likes to talk about emotions, and he only made passing comments to his closest friends about her gambling and his concerns about her health. Once, though, Dave did tell an unnamed friend that after finding Lois unconscious, quote, "That was one of the biggest mistakes of my life, going up to the house that day," end quote.
Ooh, that's a
Yeah.
rough thing to say.
Yeah. So on December 17th, 2019, Lois Reese appeared in a Florida district court. To avoid the death penalty, she admitted to shooting Pam Hutchinson with a firearm and pled guilty to first-degree murder. She also pled guilty to grand theft of a motor vehicle and other property and criminal use of personal identification information of a deceased individual. She did not provide a statement, but simply answered the court's questions, and she was sentenced to life in prison.
I mean, at least there's that.
Yeah.
She didn't try to fight it.
Yeah, she just, yeah, took it.
Which makes her even more intriguing.
Yeah, why? What the fuck? Yeah. Even if it's, like, out of convenience, I don't know, you should still
say. She probably doesn't know why. She really probably.
You're right, you're right.
Yeah.
On August 11th, 2020, after delays due to COVID, the pretrial hearing in the case of Dave Reese's murder took place. Lois recounted how she had killed Dave. On Sunday, March 11th, after she and him attended their grandson's basketball game in Wisconsin, Lois had wanted to stay with her family, but Dave had wanted to leave. They ended up leaving and argued the entire drive home and continued to argue in their bedroom.
That's over 5 hours.
5 hours, yeah. According to Lois, Dave took a loaded handgun out of his dresser, offered it to her, and said, quote, "Why don't you just kill yourself? Maybe you'll get it right this time," end quote.
That is not okay, dude.
Instead, Lois took the gun, aimed it at her husband's chest, and fired twice. Which, what the fuck? I think that this one was definitely out of rage, this murder.
Yeah. Yeah, and that would make a lot more sense. Like, he probably hit a trigger point for her.
Oh, yeah. Doesn't excuse it, you fucking lunatic bitch.
No, of course, but, of course, of course.
Yeah.
I just, like... Yeah, I guess it seems like I'm victim blaming. I absolutely am not. I just don't understand why he would say something like that.
Yeah, that's terrible to say, especially but to also your wife.
Her reaction, yeah, her reaction is not have been that.
Yeah,
that is unreasonable, ma'am. Please, come on.
The judge in the case issued the mandatory life sentence without the possibility of parole.
Mm-hmm.
In her own statement, Lois stated, quote, "What I did is an unpardonable crime. Solitude is forever. I feel I deserve this. I will have no reprieve. My life without Dave is my sentence, my penance. Our children are loving, caring, strong people. It's because of Dave's strength that they are that way. My best accomplishment was having our children," end quote. Yeah. And that is a story of the murders of David Reese and Pam Hutchinson at the hands of Lois Reese.
That, so, I have no words.
I know. It's.
I have no words. It's just like.
She needed help so bad.
She really did.
And it's not like Dave knows how to. Like, yeah, he's not, like, he just wants to run a worm farm, bro. Like,
hey, it's not on him. It's yes. not his responsibility. Like,
yeah, I agree.
No, I don't. When I say they were failed, I don't think they were failed by, like, I don't think she was failed by her husband or anything like that. But
just like her everything, life circumstances, all of it. And to have so many issues with the women in your family and for no one to be like, Maybe we should take Lois to, like, a counselor or something. You know, that sucks. That sucks.
But
a
again,
lot.
She was born in the 80s, so, like, it was
sweep it under the rug and shut the fuck up.
Yeah, don't talk about it. Yeah. But also, here's what my personal opinion, and I'm not an expert on literally anything, but I think killing your husband was maybe a crime of passion or like some in the form of rage. And then I think after that, she may be like disconnected.
And she knew, like, I know that I can't use my like information. I need to find someone who looks like me. She's a blonde white lady in Florida or wherever. Mm-hmm. Like, you're gonna find someone that looks like you. In Texas, I mean, sorry. There's gonna be someone there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Man.
Wild This is a roller coaster.
That's a good. I enjoyed this story, but
yeah, me too. Yeah. I would love for someone to dig into like the psychology behind her.
And women killers in general, just because.
Yes. I think she's going to be a big study in like profiling.
But like the sources have all said that Lois hasn't taken any interviews. Like she's like pretty, like doesn't want to talk to anyone about it.
Yeah, she doesn't want to be like a subject of study or something, probably. She probably just wants to remain disconnected from it and just live out the rest of her life.
I agree. And that's our case this week. We hope you guys enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy.
And we'll be back in 2 more weeks for another one.
Do you have an idea?
Probably murder, if I'm being honest. I have some pretty messed up ones up my sleeve, but I have to work up the courage to research them.
Yeah, I think that I'll have to look at my notes, but I think that one of the ones that we've removed is a Missy Avila one, and I just randomly thought about that the other day, and it's just similar to like a Skylar Nice one.
Oh yeah, best friend's murder.
So I might redo the research on that for another time, and we can like re-release it.
Hell yeah. So stick around, because you're going to hear Kayla do that.
Stick around. Yeah. Well, I got to get through this freaking class so far. I'm 2 weeks behind again.
Oh my God. Yeah.
I'm dying, guys. I'm struggling.
Adulting hard.
I know.
But.
Okay, well.
We'll be back in 2 weeks. Love you. Bye.
Okay, bye.